98.1 KZE. I'm Andy Gladding back with our special afternoon guest. The person to my right is not our afternoon guest. That's my wife, Kathleen, and fellow station owner. Say hello.
Hello.
That's a microphone. That's how that works. Katie, I want you to tell me about the movie you make me watch over and over and over again. Anytime it comes on TV, and then when it's not on TV, you have to pull it off of Netflix, and then you find it on whatever streaming service it's on. Your favorite summer movie, what is it?
Ooh, that would have to be Dirty Dancing.
Okay. And what is it about Dirty Dancing that just ropes you in that every single time it's on the television, you have to stop and then you get this look in your eyes like you're staring at a freshly baked plate of chocolate chip cookies?
Well, I have to say the soundtrack and the fact that it's, you know, it takes place in the Catskills. There's just so much about it that I love, and especially, you know, Patrick Swayze is not too hard on the eyes. So always fun to watch that.
So you would say that you're crazy for Swayze then?
Definitely crazy for Swayze.
Well, what if I was to tell you that the gentleman sitting to your right is responsible for a good chunk of that soundtrack and is collaborating to make that movie the summertime movie of your life?
I would say I'm very excited to be here.
Well, welcome to 98.1 WKZ, John DeNicola, the world famous John DeNicola, who is also a Hudson Valley. Are you Hudson Valley or Catskills? It's kind of like, what's the
Delaware
difference?
Delaware County, I don't know. I guess it's Catskills.
Yeah. Over, but it's fine. You know, yeah. Ozzy Osbourne, you know, over the mountain. It's all good.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about your involvement with the film and how it came to be. I mean, this is so cool that you're here.
Well, thanks for having me. I love this station. I love what you guys are doing here. But I was working with Frankie Previtt, my co-writer, and we were writing songs for his record. He had just gotten dropped from his record label, and we were working on songs for his next record to try and get a deal, basically. And we had already written Hungry Eyes when Jimmy Einer, who actually had the label that dropped Frankie, actually he just canned his label, was the music supervisor for Dirty Dancing, and said, we're looking for this song, they're getting ready to film out of sequence, they want to film the end. Right now, we've listened to like 150 songs. They couldn't find the song. They were dancing to a Lionel Richie temp song.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
And, you know, as the story goes, so Frankie was told it has to start slow and then get into a dance thing. And it told a brief outline about Johnny Castle being, you know, possibly stealing, you know, just a we had a very brief overview of the whole thing, and you know, we it's not like we had the gig. We were along with the 300 other songs,
right,
that were vying for the spot. And then, as Eleanor Bergstein, a good friend of mine, who wrote the film, said, when our song came on, it was like one of the last cassettes back in the cassette days, one of the last ones, and they put that song in and they all looked at each other, Kenny Ortega, Emil Ardolino, Patrick. When that song came on, they said, oh my God, that's the song. Now we have the end for our movie, because they didn't really have, you know, they didn't know what they were working towards.
Right.
And again, they were filming at a sequence, so they were getting ready to go in and film our big scene at the end there. And Patrick told us once they had that, and you can see they're mouthing to our demo.
Wow.
That in the film, you know, they didn't have the final yet. You know, Patrick said, you know, once we had that, we knew we were building to that ending. He said it was a whole new, renewed excitement about the film.
Now, how did it come that Eric Carmen ended up doing the official track? And this is something I think a lot of people always wonder. No, you wrote it. And I remember hearing the Frankie the Knockouts version we were talking about before. And then Eric Carmen's version of it gets into the movie. So how is it that whole process kind of works?
Well,
in 45 seconds or less, by the way.
Yeah, Frankie, that was done after. Frankie the Knockouts was done after. we were about to go into the studio. We were going in, we went in with Emil, the director, and Eleanor, and we went in and they said, we need another song for this scene. And then they said, Hungry, you know, we said, well, I think Emil said, how many beats per second is Hungry Eyes? And we said, well, we haven't gone in and recorded it yet. We're going to record it. And he goes, no, we already have it. Eric Carmen is singing it. Frankie was supposed to sing it.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Wow.
Yeah,
it was a little bit of an eye opener, but we're not complaining.
Yeah.
Frankie probably wasn't complaining after he got the first check from
no.
the company.
So. We continue to get checks. I must say.
Katie, I think you and I are in the wrong line of work. We got to get on that other side.
Yeah, I think so too.
The other side of the business.
Yeah. It's a one in a million shot, you know, but everything is, right?
And, sure.
Sure, you're not going to get it until you do it.
Right.
Well, you brought us something special today. You know, John comes walking through the door and he has like a big box with him. And it's a big cardboard box. And it actually looks pretty like labored carrying this thing. I had to be pretty heavy. And he plunks it down on the stool and goes, all right, I brought CDs. John, I hate to tell you, this is only like a 4-hour show today, just so you know. And we're already like a half an hour into it. But I did, I am very happy you brought him because I did want to play this today. And this is very cool. This is your version of Hungry Eyes, right?
Yes, it is.
Very cool. And this is recorded at your own, you have your own studio right here in the region.
Yes.
Okay, very cool. Well,
in my barn.
We're going to hear John's barn. This is the John DeNicola barn version of Hungry Eyes right here, 98.1 KZE. It's the afternoon.
you're not in a time warp or some sort of vortex where music sounds weird. That's actually Hungry Eyes by its composer, John DiNicola, who's sitting in studio with us today talking about all things Dirty Dancing and then and some things that are not Dirty Dancing. But I know that my wife, Katie, here, when she found out that John was coming in today, she was extremely excited. We'll call it an early birthday present.
Very, very excited. And that version was beautiful. First time hearing it, so very cool.
Thank you.
Do I still have to get you something for your birthday? I'm glad I got John here today.
Well, maybe something small.
Something small.
Maybe something in a small box.
The problem is small with women is usually what's going to be more expensive.
Of
That's usually what it is.
It's what we deserve.
So, you know, I love the fact that you're here, John, because, you know, you're part of that production process for the movie. And I know Katie, I don't know if she has the gumption to ask or the tenacity, or seeing that also this is like your first air shift on 98.1. I don't know if you want to come out of the box swinging big, but Swayze, let's talk Swayze real quick.
Sure.
I know that Katie's not the only lady listening to, maybe even some guys out there listening to the station right now that would love to get a little peek behind the curtain on that one.
Well, I really just dealt with him a few times. Very nice guy. He at the time they were sort of hitting him up to because of his success with what's his song? His song that he sings on.
She's Like the Wind.
She's like the wind. Sorry. You know, so he was debating whether he's asking us, what do you think? Should I do a record? You know, I'm an actor. Should I do a record? But you know, he was he's just a wonderful, just as you think he might be, is how Patrick was. Down to earth,
sure.
Talented, extremely talented. You know, there's between him and Jennifer, I don't know how that movie would have been without either of those two.
The chemistry between them is just electric.
Right. And it wasn't necessarily in real life. They apparently had a little bit of friction.
Wow.
But, you know, they're professional actors that they are. I mean, they just they really gelled on screen, and it's kind of magic. It was kind of magical. I would speak with Emil, who was the director, and you know, it was a small film company. Mm-hmm. And it was just a matter of things just coming together like, you know, you could never put together it,
sure.
unless they just came together. And, you know, the songs came the same way. And so it's like a little bit of, you know, the moon and the stars just lining up. And that's the explanation of that movie, because we're still talking about it.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
How many years later?
All came in alignment perfectly, because I mean, what was it, 85?
87.
87? Yeah. I mean, 30 plus years later, still one of my favorite movies.
Yeah, I know. I always say this. You can watch it a number of times and not see anybody acting. You feel like you're just in on something that happened. You know, and that doesn't always happen with movies. You know, you watch movies the second, third time, you go, well, I can see that they're acting there. But with this one, it just all gelled.
Yeah.
Katie, what would you say your favorite scene from the movie is? If you had to pick, like, the one scene that you could only watch from that film, from Dirty Dancing, for the rest of your life, what would the scene be?
I mean, I'm going to say, and we have, you know, the writer in the room, but the Hungry Eyes scene where they're walking around, they're practicing the dancing, when they're walking down that log over the water, it's such a cool, you know, scene where they're really growing and getting to know each other and gonna do this amazing dance that, along with the best music in the background playing, it's just such a great, it's a great scene.
Yeah, that was magical. You know, the part where Patrick is doing the thing with the hand on the spider, that's all real. She was laughing.
It's that intimate of a moment.
Yeah, and it wasn't like in the script. That just happened.
That's interesting.
And they kept it in. And, you know, it happens three times. And then, like, the third time, she's like, okay, I get it now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, plus the sort of, you know, three people dancing together doesn't hurt. You know, kind of pulls you in a little bit.
Oh, it's the best scene in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, John, since you're here, I wanted to play something else off your CD. You're the only one. Was that one we talked about before?
Yeah, we could do that.
Okay, cool. I think it's just now we have the artist in the room. Let's celebrate the art.
Why not?
This is from the album The Why Because, my first record, and then I followed up with She Said, that's the second record, and I'm about to put out my third record. So
it's nice to see that records keep coming out. It's just cool.
Yeah.
So cool. Johnny Nicola. Off the record. This is Idea One, KZ.
Are you still mad at me? Should I be down on us? And what if I foolishly say I had enough? And when the talk is over, all the words have turned gray. That's when my mixed emotions just won't go away. So we stand shoulder to shoulder with everything to lose. If we all straight ahead. Though some days seem like we shouldn't get out of bed, we wait for the storm to pass over and pray the coast is clear. 'Cause any other broken word could make it all in right. As we stand shoulder to shoulder, everything we need. If we both could choose, we'd want our world back. I'll do whatever it takes. Just give me that world back. Promise me enough till you're straight.
KZE, John DiNicola, bringing some things that we've heard and some things we haven't heard today for our afternoon here on this Friday of Memorial Day weekend. And of course, I have the I feel like I'm like Professor Louis doing this. The lovely and talented Miss Marie sitting to my right. Louis, if you're out there, you know we love you. And I don't want to bogart your style here, so I'm going to have to say something else. The incredibly, I don't know, Katie, the amazing, beautiful, wonderful, glowing my wife.
Hello.
To my right. So now, John, I know that this is something that
we kind of talked about before, but in addition to writing all these cool tunes and having your own studio, you also discovered Maroon 5, but not when they were Maroon 5, when they were Karis Flowers. So how did that come to be?
I was working with my partner, Tommy Allen, who was living in Malibu at the time. I was still here on the East Coast. And he was walking down the beach, and he heard this music coming out of a garage. And he was just floored. They were like 16 years old at that point.
Wow.
And it was the same four that ended up in Maroon 5. They were called Karis Flowers. Same guys. They just added somebody later on. But we brought them in the studio, and we did a record with them. And then they got signed to Warner, and it's a long story, but Adam actually, not so long ago when he was on The Voice.
Yes, The Voice.
They asked him, what was your chair turnaround moment? Mm-hmm. And they said, well, when these guys, John DeNicole and Tommy Allen, brought us into the studio, that was the first people that, did anything with
that's
us.
So cool.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the talent was,
it was
so obvious. Yeah. I mean, it didn't take a genius to figure that one out.
Sure.
All four of them, but obviously Adam was really the great guitarist, too. It was a privilege and a lot of fun working with them. We spent 8 months with them.
So cool.
Now you still do some things with those guys every once in a while, right? They swing by the studio, hang out.
Well, Mickey recorded on that last record you played, not on that song, but on another song. He played bass for me, and I actually tried to get Adam on the last record, but he said, "Oh, I'm doing too many projects right now. I don't want to get watered down." But mostly Mickey. Also Jesse. I guess he's a keyboard player now. He was guitarist then, and. And the drummer who's now not in the band anymore because he had carpal tunnel or something.
Oh, man.
So he had to leave the band.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Well, these things happen. Well, anyway, John, I really want to, first of all, thank you for coming down today.
Yeah, sure.
This is super cool. While we have you here, why don't you, I know you got a label. Plug your label real quick. Artists that are on your label, here's a chance to tell our listening audience, what's coming out of your shop? Because you got a barn, you got a studio. By the way, I really want to see your barn.
Oh, sure.
Being a vintage keyboard enthusiast myself.
Cool.
So we're going to have to put a day on the calendar for that. But more importantly, what's coming out from your label? What can we expect to hear? What's going on?
Well, it's OMAD Records, OMAD, which comes from Ordinary Madness, which was a Charles Bukowski story, Tales of Ordinary Madness. That's how we got OMAD Records going. But I'm finishing my third record, which should be out in the next few months. Also, Robert LaRoche, who was in a band called The Size back in the 90s. We're finishing his record. We just put out, I don't even know how to explain it, but Bob Mosley's record from 1972. Bob Mosley was one of my biggest influences on me, I should say. He was in Moby Grape. He was the bass player and the singer from, I don't know where he got his voice from, but very blue-eyed soul singer. So his record was put out in 72 after the Moby Grape debacle. and
the old hot tub incident, right?
Oh, I don't know that one. Oh. There's so many. Let me tell you, it's a rabbit hole.
Oh, boy.
There are so many stories. But Bob's record came and went, and it was. I always thought it was shy on the low end, which is not a great thing for a bass player's record. So the drums and the bass were like mixed. They just couldn't hear them well enough. So I had the bright idea of. With AI, and I'm not a big AI fan, but in this case, you could take the. We didn't have the master multi-track, so I just took the two-track. You can separate drums out, you can separate bass out, you can separate vocals out. The mid kind of stays where it is. So I just basically brought up the drums and bass, so they were there. They just needed. And so far, I mean, the reviews have been really good. That it's definitely stays the same, but mm-hmm. it's got a lift. We just put out a Christmas record, I felt a smart move because nice. You can put it out every year. Mm-hmm. So all the artists on the label, the size, Robert LaRoche, Peter Lewis, that's Loretta Young's son from Moby Grape, also Arwen Lewis, his daughter, and actually we're doing a documentary called Fall on You that it's basically about Peter and Arwen and his mother Loretta, but that Arwen came to him at age 22 and said, without any experience, teach me how to play, sing, and write. And that's the story, basically. Peter is kind of a sage. He's this deep thinker. It's the film, you just see that. He's just someone you want to hear speak.
Mm-hmm. Well, yep. we're gonna have to wait and see what happens. I'm looking forward to seeing the film. And for, once again, OMAD Records.
OMAD Records.
OMAD Records. That's where you got to go to find, we always talk about supporting local business, supporting local music, supporting local restaurants. Now we're supporting local record labels. I think that's really important. John, thanks so much for being here today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for bringing the box of stuff. We're going to have to comb through it and play some new tunes here on 98.1 KZ.
That would be wonderful.
All right. You're listening to Andy and Katie filling in for MK this afternoon on 98.1 KZ. The great John DiNicola gracing us with his presence. And we've got a couple of folks from the Red Hook VFW coming up next.